Dr. Rick Perea has been with us for, boy, I'm trying to calculate now, almost 7 years on this program. I think he made his debut right after Orlando, the January 2013 Baltimore-Denver divisional playoff game. If you may recall. Yes.
The loss.
If you may recall.
Double overtime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deep psychological damage done to Broncos country.
Yeah, where were you at that point? I should have sat in your... I needed a lot of talking to at that
right?
point.
Right? Well, I can remember that game when everybody was shocked that the Ravens beat the Broncos, and I was the one guy saying, I'm not shocked at all, and I can tell you why. And that's why Sandy brought me on, and here we are 7 years later.
And...
hold on,
still not entirely convinced that he knows the answer to that question, but you worked 2 years later, you worked with the Broncos, so you had to put your theories into practice at that point, and 2 years later it turned out pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, for those out there, I was the Broncos psychologist in 15 and when we won the Super Bowl in February 16, but that game was, I think, indicative of a team that was playing, not being psychologically sound. I mean, there were parts of their team that were very good. And, one of the things, Sandy, in Orlando, people need to understand the NFL is about talent. I get it. But it's also about talent from the neck up, how well you regulate anxiety so you can put the whole physical side out there. And what a lot of people do is they don't bring that piece. There's coaches like Belichick and Saban and Adam Gase, those guys I know that really do value that. And those guys have one thing in common, although Gase is struggling a little bit up in New York. But I want people to understand regulating from the neck up will enable you to bring the full physiological from the neck down. So, yes, Andy, that's my goal. That's what I do every day is help people bring the checkup from the neck up and bring that so their physical can take over.
What did you make of the game last night? Orlando and I were just talking about it. Orlando in particular, from a technical standpoint. What did you see? Because you look at people's eyes. Even when you're watching a game on TV, you're looking at the eyes. And you're looking at Jadeveon Clowney's eyes last night.
Right.
And you're seeing something. And then maybe you're seeing something else when you looked at Jimmy Garoppolo's eyes.
Sure.
Apart from fear, what did you see when you looked at Garoppolo?
Well, Garoppolo, let me be very specific. We watch nonverbal communication because nonverbal communication is more reliable than verbal. Verbally, I can tell you anything. I can lie to you. I can mislead you. But nonverbally, it's really hard to deceive. I mean, eyes tell a story, facial expressions, the physiological expressions. You can tell by the way a person walks if they have confidence. What I saw in Garoppolo was when they were competing, first three quarters, good. But when he got into the fourth quarter and it was live bullets flying is what I call it, he, in his eyes, he didn't have that conviction. He didn't have that strength. You could see it. It was almost like, oh, here we go. They're showing him in shotgun and you can see his eyes. They're darting around. They're not convicted like he was in the first three quarters. So what that tells me, Sandy, he doesn't have enough of that experiential piece psychologically to regulate his emotions so, again, he can be fully physiologically there. Let me give the listeners an insight. So when you are anxious, you're on what we call the sympathetic side of the autonomic nervous system, which means you have muscle tension, your thinking narrows, it doesn't increase. You have increased heart rate, increased respiration. So, for example, let's just say you're throwing a 10-yard out, and you have muscle tension in your arm, your delivery is going to change. You're going to drop your elbow because you want to get more power on the ball when you're on that sympathetic side. So what people need to understand is psychology leads to physiological failure. And so when you are anxious or nervous, like I perceived him to be in that fourth quarter when live bullets were flying, he's going to change his delivery. So it's really important to understand that psychology is the origin of most physical mistakes.
I got to give you a follow-up question with that, because you said in the third quarter, in the first three quarters, he looked great. And in that fourth quarter, it looked different. Could that be because of him losing his wide receivers and the George Kittle not playing and how his offensive line was playing, or just was the moment way too big for him at that point?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Orlando. Losing Emmanuel, it was important, because that really does give you confidence. Emmanuel's hit the ground running there. He's a veteran that's come in and helped him out a lot. It's that, But it also is just that he understands, okay, he's looking at the clock. He's looking at what we call outcome goals instead of process goals. When you stay in process, your footwork, your technique, anxiety goes down. When anxiety goes down, you're on the parasympathetic side, which is the calm side. He was looking at outcomes. I don't have my tight end. I don't have E. I don't have my full assortment. And you know what? This front four is bringing pressure because they were doing some twists and games in there that I don't think – you know, they were fully prepared for. So I think it's a combination of things, Orlando, that really got to him, that put him on that sympathetic side where he was really anxious, and I could see it in his eyes, Sandy. He was, it was deer in the headlights plus. Deer in the headlights plus. He wasn't convicted out there, and it showed.
Did you know in advance, as the kicker lined up for San Francisco to try to win the game in overtime, could you sense in looking at him that he would miss? Because he made a similar sort of field goal at the end of regulation to tie.
Yes. You know,
did he look different in overtime?
He absolutely did. He absolutely did. I could see it in his body language. I could see it in his eyes. There was one time where he lined up. He looked up. His eyes darted down. He turned around and did a pirouette, walked two steps back. Kickers don't do that. I mean, I work with kickers throughout the league, and I teach them these protocols and practices. You don't do that. You have a routine, and you stick to it. As a kicker, you stick to your routine. It's like a golfer, pre-snap, you know, your waggle. It doesn't change. It's the same. And I knew right then, I didn't know it was going to be a duck hook left, but I knew it wasn't going between the uprights. I knew the probability that he was going to miss it was very high. And you know what, Sandy? We're doing more and more with defenses to help defenses understand, look at that guy, call it out. Call it out. Say, man, hey, you're spinning around, brother. What's up? You good? You good? Let him know that you know he's not good.
Hey, I want to ask you about Antonio Brown real quick. A couple weeks ago, you know, he's still spiraling, and he goes on this rant on Twitter basically saying, forget the NFL. I don't care about playing football no more, this, and that. And then a couple hours later, he comes back with another tweet saying, I just miss football really bad. I just want to clear my name and get back into the league. What do you make of that?
Defense mechanism. You know, he's saying he misses football because right now he knows that football doesn't miss him. And so it's really
especially the three teams he was around within the last year.
Exactly.
They're all better without him.
Right. Well, you know, and coaches talk, you know, GMs talk, executive vice presidents talk. People know that right now he's not in a great spot emotionally and psychologically. And that's important. And as you know, Orlando, the locker room is really important. Like when we won in February 16, man, you could walk into the defensive side and it was just, you know, it was connection. Music, guys were dapping. I mean, it was all good. You got to have that connection on teams. And right now, he's a chemistry buster. He is a complete chemistry buster. And you don't want him on your team. The only way that I'd want him on my team, if I have him, I'll have him and I'll get him right. But there's not many guys that can connect with an AB because he's so egocentric right now, Orlando. He's not always been that way because I've been around him a bit. He right now is very egocentric, and you don't want that on a winning team.
When we come back, we're going to do something that I don't know that we've done before with a good doctor. We're going to take some comments that Vic Fangio had made yesterday, and we're going to get not only Orlando's interpretation of those comments, but Dr. Rick Perea's. Drew Lock status. Why is now the right time to bring Lock back to the practice field? Will he come off IR? You'll hear the answers, then you'll hear what they really mean from O and Dr. Rick Perea. That's next.
Now back to Orlando and Sandy on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest from Think One, the behavior design specialist, organization and performance psychologist, to the stars. Rick, doing most of your work these days with individuals rather with teams.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things I've curtailed a little bit is working with teams because it involves so much travel. And I have three sons, 16, 13, and 11 here who need me here in Denver most of the time. So I do work with teams. Specifically, I'll go in and give presentations, but individuals. But I work a lot with high school athletes around the area, Sandy. And that's been really fruitful, is helping them get their thoughts in the right spot, shaping their thoughts so they can perform physically to their potential.
We're going to do something we haven't done before. I'm going to give you a chance to react because this Drew Lock issue maybe more important or less important than we believe. I'm not sure. But Vic Fangio confirmed, yes, yesterday, that Drew Locke will be, in fact, practicing this week. But he wouldn't go so far as to say that Locke will be eventually activated and starting at quarterback for the Broncos. Does Fangio sound like he has a handle on this situation? Let's hear what he had to say yesterday about Drew Locke's status.
He's going to start practicing.
Okay. Either one of you want to jump in? That's all he said. He's going to start practicing.
Yeah, I think right now, with everything being said, I don't think that Vic Fangio is convinced that Drew Locke should be the guy coming off the practice squad. And I think that Elway is getting heat. He's hearing it. He's hearing the rumblings. But also, you don't want to get into the same situation that you did before when you had Brock Osweiler and everybody. And you never really had a plan. So I think that Elway's forcing the issue of practicing Drew Locke now. And I don't think that Vic Fangio necessarily just is fully on board right now with Drew Locke being the one to come back.
You know, one of the things that stands out for me, Sandy, right away is being a psychologist for teams with Denver, Miami, Cleveland, several teams throughout the league. You know, these guys only let us know what they want to let us know. Coaches, administrators, vice president, general managers, they only let us know what they want to let us know. You know, one of the things, and I'm not trying to toot my horn here, but I know when I'm with a team, I know things about that team the coaches don't know, the executive vice president doesn't know, because players will tell me things they won't tell those guys. So I just want people to understand that even coaches will keep things under wrap to the media. So just by that little soundbite would tell me that he doesn't want to show his hand, he doesn't want to show the cards of what's really going on behind the scenes.
Doc, I got a question for you.
Sure.
This past week, well, a couple weeks ago, we saw Garrett Bowles get a ton of penalties, and
right,
he addressed the media. He says basically the refs are picking on him. He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know what he's doing. But this past week in a win, the Tennessee Titans beat the Kansas City Chiefs, and Tyler Lawander, their Pro Bowl left tackle, goes out and says, hey, you know, penalties are an issue. It's not acceptable. I got to get this figured out. Why have we not seen that from a Garrett Bowles who has led the league in penalties the last couple
right,
of years?
Right. Well, I have a little inside information on him. We had a kid in Miami that played with him at Utah. I mean, yeah, he played at Utah,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Who played
right,
with him at Utah. And he's just not at the mature state enough to be accountable. He's not accountable for his actions. You know, that takes a certain level of maturity. What people need to understand is the prefrontal cortex of the brain doesn't stop developing until you're 24. I don't know how old Garrett is. Is he about that age?
27.
Okay. So, older rookie. But a lot of these guys are still figuring out how to think what we call executive functioning, which is organization, higher levels of thinking, and out. That's not his out, because he's got to be accountable. He's just not mature enough right now to be accountable for what he's doing. He's holding. You watch the replay. He's holding.
Yeah.
They're not inventing that. So I would just say that Garrett should probably work with someone individually in developing some of those competencies and acumen that will help him become a little bit more mature, and accountable, not only to his team, but himself.
All right, let's hear from Fangio. Why was this week the right time as opposed to, let's say, 2 weeks ago? He was eligible to practice 2 weeks ago, did not. Why is this week the right time to bring Locke back to practice?
Because we had that bye week last week. You know, so if we would have brought him back earlier, that would have counted as a week of practice, even though we didn't practice. So that was part of that whole equation there.
Part of that whole equation.
Vic Fangio knew that he wasn't going to practice this team regardless. Even if they lost to Cleveland, they weren't going to practice during the bye week. And if you bring back Drew Locke before that, that's a whole week that you said already that we're activating him, and now you only have 2 weeks to get him ready, which tells me that mentally, Drew Locke is nowhere near where he needs to be, that he needs the extra weeks, that all 9 weeks that he's been on IR, he hasn't developed any more than you would expect. So now you bring him back and get the full 3 weeks after the bye weeks, as opposed to bringing him back before and only getting 2 weeks of practice.
You know, what I see the Broncos doing right now, Sandy and Orlando, is they're on the rebound of making a major quarterback bad decision. You know, they draft the kid in the first round, and he's gone in a year and a half. He's gone in 2 years. They're rebounding from that. They're going back and looking at their personnel department. Said, okay, what didn't we see in this kid? What's the tall kid?
Yeah, you're talking about Paxton Lynch.
Yeah, Paxton Lynch. Like, what didn't we see in this kid that we missed on
tall
him?
Kid, yeah.
So now they're overcompensating. Now they're overcompensating. So like you said, Orlando, he was not right emotionally, psychologically. And he may not be, but he may be, but they're being overly cautious because they know that what they have, they don't want that to happen again. Because at the end of the day, I love John, but John has a, you know, John has a healthy ego and he doesn't want to be perceived that he's making mistakes on QB selections.
So they're cautious. And when we come back, will Drew Locke come off injured reserve this season? Not so much the answer, but how he answers it and the tone. We'll get Orlando and Dr. Rick Perea commenting on that and whether the Broncos will go as far as to change their practices in order to help facilitate Drew Locke and get him more reps. That's next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Orlando and Sandy.
Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest, as we continue. And let's hear from Vic Fangio talking yesterday about whether Drew Locke will come off injured reserve and actually play some this year.
Well, he'll be determined as one of the two that we can bring off IR. That doesn't mean that he'll be activated.
Wow. Vic Fangio doesn't...
Boy, he's dodging this more than any other issue that he's confronted all year. He just won't address it directly.
Because I don't think he really has the control. I think when it's all said and done, it's John going to be saying, hey, we're activating Drew Locke this week. Yeah. Whether you like it or not. I think he could pound on the table and say, no, I don't want this guy activated. I don't want him on the 46-man game day roster. And John's telling him, yes, well, that's what we're doing.
I think, listen to all three of these, Rick. My impression from a novice standpoint, you're the expert, Vic Fangio doesn't want Drew Locke playing this year.
Yeah, I feel that in his voice. He's very ambiguous. Like he's got competing thoughts on both sides of his hemispheres of his brain. Yeah. His right hemisphere is competing with his left hemisphere. Yeah. And I understand, and it makes sense what Orlando says, you know, if there's someone else, barking in his ear, which that would be consistent with what I've seen in that building.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, I think he's very ambiguous and he doesn't want to really let on to that. He's got to be very careful and choose his words carefully. And when you do that, you do not sound convicted. And that's what he sounds like.
And here's the interesting thing. The only other option, because they've written off Riddick and Jake Butt completely, it seems like. They're not coming back. You know Patrick is, because he's out there practicing this week. And, and Elway announced a couple of weeks ago, not Fangio, Elway said, oh, Tim Patrick's coming back.
Yeah.
When they traded Emmanuel Sanders, Elway said Tim Patrick's coming back. The interesting guy in all this is Bryce Callahan, who's back in the practice field this week. He's Vic Fangio's guy. That's the guy Fangio, among all the free agents, that's the guy Fangio knew the most about and clamored for. I think Vic Fangio wants to bring Bryce Callahan back a lot more than he wants to bring Drew Locke back. But here's the question that DMAC asked him yesterday. Will you change your practice routine to help Drew Locke get more reps than a backup or a third quarterback would normally get?
Possibly. But, it's late in the year, and at this time of the year, if you're doing anything, you're cutting back reps a little bit. Now, we're going to practice tomorrow, which is an extra day for this week. It won't be a full-blown practice, but we'll be out there and get about 25 or 26 snaps of offense, defense, and so that will be another opportunity.
Yeah, it gets hard. At this time of the year, it really does get hard because – you go from training camp when your body's fresh and every period now is 10 reps in training camp. And then the start of the season, and now it cuts down because You're not allowing the twos. You don't have twos and threes. So now it goes to eight reps once the season starts. And then once you get in November, middle of November, towards the end, all of a sudden it cuts right back down a little bit more. Now it's six reps. So it is going to be extremely hard. And when you think about six reps, you want your starting quarterback or who's going to be out there on game day to go take all six of those plays. You don't want to be fooling around now and giving the backup any of those six plays. And one period is not a lot of plays.
That's
so
what
it's going to be hard.
He's saying it's not more reps. It's fewer reps this time of year. Again, you hear one side of the brain versus the other side of the brain in that answer.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing, too, that I think a lot of listeners may not understand is there's a lot of emotionality and connection between coaches and players. I've been on teams where you look at the starter and you're thinking, okay, is this person our best representation at that position? And then invariably there'll be an injury and then the backup comes in and plays even better. You know, I get it. It's about talent. I get it. The physiological talent. But it's about the ability to regulate emotion and put your best on the field every day. And I know coaches that really struggle with anxiety in their play calling. Offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators. Nobody talks about that, Sandy, about how the anxiety affects their decision making. And it also affects who they choose to play, too. Some coaches are emotionally connected to certain players more than others, and invariably those people play. I know I was an undrafted free agent linebacker with the Broncos back in 83, and I saw it there. The linebackers that got the most reps were players that were connected, and I won't mention names, but there were players on that Denver team that made the team that had real good connections with Merle Moore, the linebacker coach. And we had linebackers that were flat out physical, gifted, and they got cut. And I understand there were some other reasons why, but I want people to understand these are all human beings, coaches, players, and sometimes decisions are based on emotionality.
Just to clarify, because I'm getting some text, well, Bryce Callahan's not on IR.
Yeah.
It's still the choice. It's still the choice. I know he's part of the active roster, and the decision is to put him on IR or bring him back.
But it's also a game-day roster spot.
It's a game-day roster spot.
Where you're only allowed to dress 46 guys.
Right, right.
I was going to say that as well, because on game day, there's literally only 46 guys. So you got another, what, that's eight guys out of the 53-man roster,
seven,
so you got seven guys that are not dressing on that day.
Right.
So with Drew Locke now, is he going to be one of these 46, or is he going to be on straight clothes?
Because there's no point in activating him and then not dressing him out. I mean, that's just dumb. And I do think, and maybe the Broncos feel the same way, that they've got an investment in Bryce Callahan and want to see if he can play.
Yeah,
because this injury was supposed to be a 4 to 6 week injury, and Fangio's talking about, well, it's a 4 to 6 week injury from a certain point. Now it's 7 weeks, so they've revised this a couple of times.
Well, you got decisions to make on Chris Harris. You got decisions to make.
That's right. That's why they want to see Bryce
Callahan.
Are
you going to start playing Isaac Yiadom a little bit more? Yeah. You got decisions to make now with seven draft picks in the first four rounds of this year. Are you taking some corners with using some of those picks? So you got to see what Bryce Callahan can do. He has to get on the field at some point.
We have two major questions about the Broncos right now. One is the front office, and the other is the state of ownership. Do the players pay more attention to one or the other? Both? Neither one?
It depends on the team, Sandy. There's a different climate and culture in every team. You know, there's teams like, for example, the Miami Dolphins. Steven Ross is the majority owner, but you got people like J-Lo and Serena and Venus who are minority portion owners. So there's a lot of attention in Miami on the ownership. Steven Ross is a guy that comes down every weekend from New York, and he's got his entourage with him. He's very visible. And then there's other teams where ownership is not as visible. So it depends on the climate and culture of the team. I would say here it is a focus, and I've talked to several players because I still do work with several Bronco players individually. And it is a focal point here, and it's very ambiguous. People don't know, like, where does this all stand and where does this represent in terms of the team's stability and its ability to win. You know, you talk to people like Belichick and Saban, and they'll tell you that winning starts at the top of the organization. And it's really true. The best organizations in the world, Sandy and Orlando, are not just athletic teams, but people like Google, Apple, Amazon. They all have a culture by design, and most teams that don't win have a culture by default. And that's something to understand. When you have a culture by design, meaning you've designed a hierarchy that holds people accountable, that tends to be successful. But most teams, and I know this from experience, most teams in the NFL have a culture by default.
I got a quick question for you, Doc, regarding the Broncos. When you see a guy like Juwan James and the Broncos go pay him a ton of money to be the starting right tackle, and then he comes in and he gets hurt, and then he comes back after a couple weeks and then gets hurt again. Psychologically, could something be going on there with him, why he's not being able to stay on the football field?
Orlando, you're looking across there. I mean, you got to see these nonverbals going 100 miles an hour. Because I know JJ.
You pushed the right button.
Yeah, he was with us in Miami, and I know him well. And I love him as a person. Love him as a person.
You want him as your next-door neighbor?
Right. Right.
For the next 30 years
of
your life.
He's my dog. He's my dog. But as my starting right, left tackle, whatever, you know, Juwan's mom is a PhD. Okay, let's be honest here. And she has taught him a lot of analytical skills, and sometimes he's over-analytical, if you will. He from the neck up, he's great, but sometimes he measures things too much psychologically that lead into the physiological. So my point is that, first of all, when they paid him that much, I kind of shook my head because I know Juwan. He's physically everything you'd want in a tackle.
Right.
He's got the length.
Fits
he's
the
got
profile.
Athleticism. But from the neck up, he's a great neighbor. How about that?
That's a right tackle. He's a great neighbor. Hey, real quick before we let you go, and I know this is the subject of a longer conversation, but if it could be brief, just tell us what's going on with Baker Mayfield, because you worked so closely with him a year ago. What's happened to him?
Well, so, you know, what most people don't realize is he had a quarterback coach last year named Ken Zampezi.
Right.
And Zampezi's dad, Ernie Zampezi, was a long-time
legendary coach.
Yeah, OC for the Cowboys and whatnot. Ken Zampezi, in my estimation, is one of the best quarterback coaches in the league because he teaches fundamentals. He teaches techniques, not only in training camp, but in week 3, week 7, week 9. He's a fundamentalist. And Baker, of all quarterbacks, needs that tech fundamentals work. He needs somebody to ground him on a consistent basis. Because of his personality, he's very free thinker, he's a very open thinker, and he can tend to go off into being really kind of an ad-lib guy, wanting to break pocket before the second progression comes open. He needs a great fundamental coach, and he misses Ken Zampezi. Then he knows, then everyone in that building knows, but Ken Zampezi is what he's missing, in my opinion.
Yeah, very interesting. And, of course, he had a lot of influence over the hiring of the head coach.
Yes.
It may not have been the smartest thing in the world to give him that kind of say. Again, it's Think One, the behavior design specialist, Dr. Rick Perea, www.think14u.org. It's been great today.
Hey, thanks.
You've done a little differently.
Stuff.
You've been great.
Yeah, love you guys, man. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, and we'll have much more ahead. Gary Kubiak week as the offensive advisor for the Minnesota Vikings goes up against the Broncos on Sunday. That's next.